Depending on who you are, on a day-to-day basis, you might not think about simple things like parking your car, using a public restroom, ordering a pizza, or going to the bank. For some people with disabilities, though, the daily tasks many of us almost don't even have to think about are arduous chores. The 1990 Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, meant to prevent discrimination against people with disabilities and ensure their rights. By requiring accessibility and accommodation, the ADA was also supposed to improve people's daily lives. But its enforcement has been less than uniform. So some businesses and public spaces, more than we'd probably like to think, aren't even accessible for the disability community. This is In the Hive. I'm Emily Means, and today on the show, we dive into the ADA, its history and implementation, while looking at a bill related to the federal statute that's under consideration up at the Utah Capitol. At a legislative hearing last week, lawmakers debated a measure by Provo Republican Representative Norm Thurston that would stop people from sending demand letters to businesses that might not be compliant with the Americans with Disabilities Act. The two-hour committee hearing included testimony from a number of opponents and proponents of the measure.
Paul Hitzelberger. My wife and I own 30 Del Taco restaurants in Utah. All we ask for is an awareness if we're not in compliance and a time to fix it, not a demand you are out of compliance and, you know, I want $3,900. We've had four instances. Two of the instances, we were the height of a nickel off on the slope over 10 feet. Okay, so instead of 2%, we were at 2.1. And it needed to be fixed. And I had no issue with fixing it, and we did, and that was over $10,000 each time. But to say, you know, the slope is wrong, which we aren't going to know that. I mean, we make tacos.
Hello. My name is Sarah Johnson, and I am an advocate with Disability Rights Action Committee, as well as an advisor for the Utah Disability Advisory Council and Health Insight. And I would like to thank Representative Thurston for working with the disability community and hearing many of our concerns. However, I still feel that this bill does not address a large problem that we see with the ADA. I may have a different feeling about it if this bill had been proposed a year or even 2 years after passage of the act. We are at 27 years after passage of this act. I have lived my entire life with a disability. I have lived half of that with no ADA protection and half of that with ADA protection, and I can tell you what it was like before we had the ADA. I believe the people in this room are very good people that do want to include accessibility. However, I feel this bill really removes a lot of the impetus for getting to the bottom of accessibility. I don't want to see a bill that makes it a harder process for any person with a disability to get what they need.
In the end, the bill passed out of the House Judiciary Committee on an 8-1 vote. Recently, I talked with Representative Thurston to get some more background on this bill. Representative Norm Thurston, thank you so much for talking with me. Of course, we're discussing HB 115, which addresses what you refer to as bad faith demand letters concerning the Americans with Disabilities Act. Why don't you tell us where the idea for this bill came from?
So I have had several constituents and other stakeholders contact me about a practice that has become common across the nation, actually, where people are trying to use the ADA as a way to generate income. And so what they will do is they will go into a business and they will identify a problem and then they will demand money from the business to avoid a lawsuit. So it's basically saying, look, if you fix the problem, sign a non-disclosure agreement, and send us a check, we promise we won't sue you in federal court. Because if we do sue you in federal court, first of all, it's going to cost you a lot more money because you're going to have to go get an attorney now, and we will win. Because the way the ADA is structured, it's very heavily weighted in favor of anyone who finds any sort of violation at all. So I've had lots of businesses tell me that people are just coming in right off the bat, demanding money. Of course, they want things fixed. That's part of it, too. But it's the demanding the money that really bothers people, that's saying, hey, look, I should have some opportunity to have a dialogue with somebody saying, oh, the sign in my parking lot's fallen over. I didn't know that. Let me fix it. I'd be happy to do that. Let's take care of the problem and not have to pay you. And the standard amount that they're asking for is $3,900. So it's kind of like private citizens can assess a $3,900 fine on any violation that anybody finds at any business for any reason. And what they're saying is this doesn't it seem like how the law was intended to work.
So you've kind of tailored this bill, from what I've seen, to mostly affect lawyers, is kind of what it looks like to me. It's not just people with disabilities who are sending these bad faith letters. This is about lawyers, right?
Well, it sort of is about lawyers. It could be about anybody in reality. We do have in our community a lot of really great people that are helping to get problems solved. So if there's a disabled person that's having a problem in their apartment complex, they're having a problem with a business, they're having a problem wherever, they can go to the not-for-profit sector and find people that will help them get that problem solved. What's nice about that is the not-for-profit help never asks for money up front. Now, they will take you to federal court if you don't take them seriously, and I want to be very clear about that, and that's fine, but they will allow people a chance to work with them to get the problem resolved. What we're talking about here are for-profit enterprises that they're different business models, but typically what happens is you've got an attorney and you've got a professional plaintiff who is also being paid to be an investigator. And so there's this sort of little cottage industry, if you will, of people who are going out there and they spend their days looking for businesses with violations so that they can generate that $3,900 settlement. And then that money goes back to both the attorney and then the quote-unquote investigator, or sometimes they call them a tester. And so the people are making money off it. Now, yeah, they're getting problems fixed in the community, but that's not the reason why they're doing it, which is our claim that these are really bad faith. If you're really interested in making businesses better, this is not how you go about it.
Well, and that was kind of my next question. Even though these letters are benefiting a lawyer or, like you said, a tester, they're also trying to get businesses to comply with the law, right?
Sure. That's behind all of this, is that they're using there are people out there whose primary objective is actually to increase access where access is limited. That's noble. That's a great thing. We want people to be doing that. I think that what we're looking at here are people that's not their primary objective. Their primary objective is to make money. And the way that they make money is by finding violations. And in some people's mind, that could be a fairly fine distinction. But when you see a plaintiff that files 200 cases in the course of a few months, you have to start wondering, was that legit? Did that one person really experience 200 access issues or 99 access issues over the course of this period of time? Or is that something that's manufactured? And I think that's what we're really concerned is that we're creating an incentive for people to abuse the process because they know they can get money out the back end.
Well, like you said, businesses have come to you with this problem. Is it difficult for these businesses to become ADA compliant? Do you know what kind of issues they're having in getting there?
Yeah, so here's the real problem. Small business owners in particular are not experts on the ADA. And the ADA is very complicated. There's a lot to it. If you want to be 100% compliant 24/7, it requires a fair amount of knowledge and constant monitoring. And oftentimes, people who get into the business, they don't have control over their space. They're leasing space and things that are out of their control. They don't know what things are supposed to be doing, or they hire a contractor. They trust that the contractor has done it right. And things don't always go. There was one estimate from one of the testers that said that their belief was that a good tester could walk into 90% of businesses and find at least something wrong. And I think that's a commentary on a couple of things. One is that the ADA has been around for 27 years. If the ADA is truly successful, why would someone tell me that 90% of businesses aren't compliant? There's something wrong with this whole system. And we can have that conversation. I would love to have that conversation on another day as to why so many businesses are having problems. But the answer is not to create an army of gotcha or preemptive testers that are going to go out and try to shake these businesses down to avoid going to federal court.
You mentioned that the ADA has been in effect for almost 3 decades now. Isn't it reasonable for people with disabilities to expect to have access to these places, to restaurants or, you know, wherever they're going about town?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No one has a question about that. None of the businesses that contacted me, they all want people in wheelchairs, people who are blind, people who have any sort of disability, they all want them to come to their business. What they believe, however, is that that's not what this is all about. This is not about making sure that people have access. That what they believe that it's about is people looking for ways to turn this ADA, any sort of an ADA violation, into a $3,900 check. And they would be happy to fix things if people would just point out to them, which happens on a fairly regular basis. Somebody has a problem, they point out the owner, they write a letter, and it gets fixed. And if it doesn't get fixed, then take them to federal court and deal with it. But at least give people a chance up front, especially small business owners, to fix the problem without having to pay this settlement fee. And that's what this is really all about, just giving somebody a fair chance to do it without having to pay a settlement fee.
Right. And you and your colleagues at the legislature brought that point up often during this bill's hearing. But conversely, people who are opposed to the bill, people with disabilities who testified, said that, you know, they've sent these letters before and the businesses can just kind of kick the can down the road. So is it optimistic to assume that businesses will fix the problem once the letter is sent?
Oh, no, that's a great question. So, yes, I will admit that there are some businesses in some cases that have been notified. They just ignore the letter. You send them another letter, they ignore the second letter. Those are the businesses that we want to be in the federal court. Those are the businesses that should be in federal court. Those are the ones where you should be going to the federal judge and saying, look, this guy is not paying attention. They just don't care. They're not going to do it. Those are the ones that should be in federal court. The business that should not be in federal court is the guy whose sign falls down. Somebody notices and they tell them, they say, hey, your sign's falling down. He's like, great, I'll get that fixed tomorrow. Why should that guy be in federal court? Why should he have to pay a $3,900 fee to somebody who pointed out that his sign needs to be fixed or that something else in his business needs to be fixed? If he's willing to do it, just treat him with decency and respect and let him fix it and thank him for fixing it.
I'm going to be a little bit blunt here, Representative Thurston, but I'm wondering, does your legislation give businesses a tool to ignore complaints that they're, you know, skirting federal law?
No, it doesn't. Because what the bill does is that if there is a legitimate good faith claim, so the good faith claim says, here's the specific problem, it needs to be fixed, and doesn't ask for money, that still is protected. In fact, that's encouraged under this law. And if somebody ignores that, we fully expect that the next step would be that that business should find themselves faced with a federal court case. So we just want to guide people in the direction of productive dialogue to get these problems resolved. And part of the concern that I have is at a higher level is that if we continue to create animosity between the business community and the disabled community, there's a national push right now by the business community to change the Americans with Disabilities Act, to lessen the opportunity for people to make claims against businesses. I don't think that's wise. I don't think that it's a good thing for us to heighten the animosity between the businesses and the disabled community to the point that Congress feels like that they're going to be compelled to, quote unquote, fix the ADA. I would prefer that we have a spirit of cooperation and that we, you know, we're strong and direct about it, but that we allow the businesses an opportunity to do this right, to receive the information, and not be threatened with these extortion claims.
Right. I saw that Congress is hearing a similar bill this week, I think, like Thursday. But to that point, I'm wondering, do you think that the state level is the place to fix this discrepancy within the ADA, or do you think this is better handled somewhere else at the national level?
Sure. There are four places where this could be handled. And I think all four of them are important. One, for the little bit that the state legislature has control over, which are these demand letters, we should send a message that we expect people to behave a certain way. The second thing is the bar, which regulates ethical conduct among its attorneys, needs to take a decision of what is ethical behavior by attorneys and what's not ethical behavior by attorneys. The third one is the federal courts. Federal courts need to start being more direct about what are frivolous or malicious claims and what are legitimate claims. They have way too many cases in their docket, and so if they can just send a clear message that says these are the claims that should be in federal court, everything else we don't want to hear, if the federal courts could get involved, they could take care of that one. And then the last one, which is my least favorite, is that Congress could address it through a congressional action. I just don't trust that Congress is going to do a very good job of getting it right. Just my general distrust of the federal process, I guess.
That's like the real Utah way, Representative
Utah
Thurston.
Way. Yes, it is.
Okay, well, do you have anything else to add on the topic of this bill?
I do. You know, people have said that like we're taking away tools for people to get things remedied, and we're not. People still can go to the legitimate disability law center, legitimate 501c3s. They can even send their own demand letters. They can do all of that. We're just asking, do not demand a settlement money up front until a business has had a reasonable opportunity to fix the problem and to work in good faith to get it resolved. And by all means, if a person has a problem that the business refuses to fix, get an attorney, take them to federal court. Disability Law Center would be happy to help with that. I'm sure they've done it for other people. They're happy to help mediate these issues. There are resources out there to get this done in a way that is fair and that treats everyone with respect in the process.
Well, your bill passed out of committee. Do you know when we're going to hear it on the House floor?
It looks like we're about 50 bills down on the House third reading bill, so I'm horrible at forecasting, but that's probably about a week away.
All right. We will we'll check up on that. Representative Norm Thurston, thank you so much for talking with me.
Great. Thank you. Okay.
Representative Thurston said during the committee hearing that he's not a lawyer, and neither am I, so I needed a lot of education on the ADA. Enter Leslie Francis, Distinguished Professor of Philosophy and Law at the University of Utah. Much of her research focuses on disability law. I thought she could fill in some blanks when it comes to understanding the ADA.
So the ADA, which went into effect in 1990, is the last of the major anti-discrimination statutes. It has three different parts that are, I think, tremendously important, and a fourth that I think is also important, but a little bit different. The first part of the Americans with Disabilities Act, Title I, prohibits discrimination in employment on the basis of disability. Title II of the ADA prohibits discrimination in public services. So things like your ability to go attend a legislative hearing. Title III prohibits discrimination in public accommodations. There's a list of what count as public accommodations in the ADA. Those include things like doctor's offices, insurance offices, dry cleaners, restaurants, a variety of kinds of businesses that would regularly be used by the public. And the argument of the ADA was that people with disabilities were, I'll use the lovely words of Jacobus Ten Broeck, who was visually impaired, a professor at the University of California at Berkeley in the political science department, that it barred people from the right to live in the world, people with disabilities. So imagine a world in which you have a mobility impairment and you can't get across a curb, you can't get into a restaurant, you can't get into any places of business, because most of them were constructed in your town in a day in which a lot of sewage ran down the street. I mean, that's why we've got curbs. So, you know, outmoded structures that currently don't serve any function except to make life difficult for people with mobility impairments, people on bicycles, people pushing strollers, all those kinds of things. And the ADA was designed to recognize in a genuine way the right to live in the world.
Okay, so the ADA is passed in 1990. How do the lives of people with disabilities change after?
Now they can claim legal protection against discrimination in employment, in public services. I think probably if you actually look at the data, the most immediate impact was in public services. But public accommodation, I mentioned that there's a fourth part of the ADA that's also really important, public transportation. So think about if you're a person with a mobility impairment, a sensory impairment like difficulty in seeing, you may very well be dependent on public transit or expensive private transit. And there are, you know, serious questions about how many taxi cabs are equipped to take somebody with a wheelchair. But that's part of what the ADA attempted to remedy as well. But just imagine if you have to climb into any bus, or think about public transit now in Salt Lake. Right. Trax is accessible, so you can get where you need to be. Buses sometimes are a little bit harder to get into, but they kneel, and they have ramps.
And this is all under the ADA?
Yeah. I mean, before the ADA, public transit didn't have these kinds of requirements, and it's been absolutely transformative for people's ability to get around in the world.
Frances mentioned that the ADA was the last of the major anti-discrimination statutes to go into effect. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 covered race, color, religion, and later included sex and national origin. I wondered why people with disabilities were left out of civil rights conversations prior to the ADA.
There's always been a kind of tension in disability rights. Are they welfare or are they civil rights, rights of people to be out in the world on the same terms as others? And some disability protections have been viewed as welfare, and people with disabilities have been viewed as needing special protection rather than as appropriate subjects for civil rights. So I think that's also part of it. It's part of why disability was not given strict scrutiny under the 14th Amendment.
Representative Thurston and many of the committee members who voted for the bill said the ideal situation would be for people to bring ADA violations to the business's attention and then give the business time to correct or cure the problem. Representative Thurston called it
the Utah way.
But Frances says that's not what the law is about.
The ADA doesn't say take your time in getting it fixed. The ADA says if you're a restaurant, a bar, or other establishment serving food or drink, you're a public accommodation, and that means you serve the public. Now, presumably, businesses should know that if they're serving the public, they need to be serving the public. And if you give them a grace period, they're going to just drag their heels. I mean, they've already been dragging their heels for 25 years.
With this bill being discussed at the state level and a similar piece of legislation making the rounds in Congress, could the ADA be undergoing some changes soon?
This is a bill that is enacted. The ADA was enacted under the authority of Congress to regulate interstate commerce. And Congress can change what it's done. So Congress could change the ADA. I don't think a state would be well advised to do it on its own, because a statute like this, which in effect changes the structure of ADA remedies, is highly likely to be thought in conflict with the ADA and hence preempted. I mean, if the legislature wants to set up a fund to help businesses comply with the ADA rather than spend money defending this lawsuit, I'd be delighted.
That was Leslie Frances, Distinguished Professor of Philosophy and Law at the University of Utah. The Disability Law Center is a nonprofit organization working to enforce and strengthen laws addressing the needs of people with disabilities in Utah. In case you're wondering where the DLC falls on HB 115.
We oppose this bill. We can't support a bill that we believe would in any way make it more difficult for a person to assert their rights under the ADA.
This is Nate Krippis, an attorney for the Disability Law Center. Representative Thurston reached out to the DLC for feedback in the crafting of the bill.
So Representative Thurston reached out to us when he decided to put this bill out there to get our feedback. And we have provided feedback, mostly that we're not super happy with a lot of the things in the bill. With that said, we have made suggestions that we thought would, at a minimum, not even suggestions as much as just providing information on how the DLC works through a Title III case, what the DLC usually does, how we work with demand letters, what we're usually doing, and then we just kind of our perspective, I would say, more how we've worked with Representative Thurston.
Is it difficult to achieve compliance with the ADA? You said that just if I had been here 6 months ago, I would have noticed a ramp that was too steep.
Yeah, across the street. I said that was not our building.
Not here, okay. Just to be clear,
not our building. There's plenty of information out there. It's not hard to find the information about what standards are expected. Do I think it's difficult to comply? You know, I don't build buildings. I don't know much about how difficult it will be. I mean, I know with the hearing, a lot of people said, well, there's settlement and this could change. I mean, I don't know how frequent this is. I can't speak to that. All I can say is the information is out there. ADA has been around for more than a quarter of a century, and the new standards, which were updated in 2010, I believe they kind of are updated every few years to make some changes. You know, we've had almost a decade now of these standards being out there, and it's not something you can't find. So do I think it's difficult to comply? I can't say. All I can say is the information is available for someone to find if they want it, and, you know, they can certainly have their building inspected.
The Disability Law Center often deals with the sort of situation mentioned in Representative Thurston's bill. Krippis says once a business is notified of the violation, they can't always be counted on to right the wrong.
The Americans with Disabilities Act, when it was originally enacted, did not provide for some type of enforcement. There's no agency you can go to. So what it did was say, we're going to essentially have members of the private bar go out and enforce this law. We're going to have lawyers enforce it. That's the only way it can be done. So when a person notices a violation, and I heard this at the hearing quite often, that businesses, if they just heard these complaints from a person, they would get it fixed right away. I frankly will dispute that characterization of events, because I have many clients come to me that say, I've told this business three times, you know, I want this fixed, and they told me they don't have to do it. And then I get involved and maybe they get it fixed. Now, the Disability Law Center is here, and we are a pro bono, you know, a nonprofit doing pro bono legal work for people with disabilities. So we don't charge. So we don't necessarily have to do what other lawyers do. But there are a series of violations across Utah. And if a person goes to an attorney and that attorney wants to help, I guess I'm at a loss where Representative Thurston and some other legislators think that attorneys don't have a right to be paid for their time. If that is the way this can be remedied. I know there's talk of people having the right to notice and things like that. And certainly I can understand that argument, but I would say that they have had many, many years of notice of the Americans with Disabilities Act. You know, I think, as was pointed out at the hearing by one of the attorneys who does these cases, there isn't a lot of money to be made on this. There may be some money being made, but there's no other enforcement mechanism for people, and I just see that attorneys, you know, they need to be paid for their time when they're doing the work that needs to be done.
Have you notified a business about an ADA violation? Or are you a business owner who has received one of the letters mentioned in Representative Thurston's bill? Tell us about it at our Facebook page, KCPW88.3, or you can email us at comments@kcpw.org with your feedback and questions. Thanks to the KCPW team for their support of this show, as well as to Andrew Shaw, who produced the show's theme music. And thank you for tuning in. You can find podcasts of In the Hive at kcpw.org. Up next is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Emily Means. Thanks for listening.